Welcome to Cattle HQ, a podcast from industry experts and progressive producers discussing cutting-edge info about the cow-calf sector to keep cattlemen and women in the know and positively affect their bottom line.
Welcome to Cattle HQ, brought to you by South Dakota State University Extension. I am Madison Kavarna, a beef nutrition field specialist based out of Watertown, and joining me on this episode are Charlie and Courtney from Totten Angus near Chamberlain, South Dakota. A change of scenery for me to come further south, but never a bad thing to get out of the office and talk with folks about cattle and their cattle management. I spent the morning with Charlie and Courtney touring their operation and chatting up a storm in the pickup, but instead of me introducing you, I wanted to give you both some time to introduce yourself to our audience, for those who maybe have never heard from you before, or some new listeners that might be on.
Okay, well, I am Courtney Terrell, and we live on this operation with Charlie and Tanya, my mom and dad. My husband, Jonathan, has a off-the-farm job, and then I'm also in the National Guard, mostly for the health insurance. We are here on Totten Angus Ranch, located north of Chamberlain, South Dakota, in the Rough River Hills. We are a registered Black Angus seed stock ranch. We have a bull sale the first Saturday of May with approximately 80 yearling and 2-year-old bulls offered. Calve out about 400 head of cows and rent a couple thousand acres of land. We cull hard and make the cows work hard for us, and that's why we have stuck with moderate frame and easy fleshing cattle. We also think that education and continuing to learn is very important. So each year, or for the last several years, we've been hosting the grazing school, and we also try to attend as many learning opportunities as possible. We might be hosting a bird tour later this year, and we think it's important to continue to share with others, and we're also hoping to experiment with some more things like fire to control cedars and improve the land.
So I'm sure our listeners can see why I was excited to get out of the office and come down here. There's a lot of moving parts on the ranch down here, between the cows, nature, all of the things going on. So I was excited to come down and also get them to join me on the podcast as well. But one of the things that will kind of start this conversation with is one of the things that they've implemented on the place is swath grazing, and they fit it into their grazing and cattle management plans. But one question I had for you is kind of what brought up the idea of swath grazing to bring it in, and then, you know, how do you even get started into adding that into an operation somewhere?
Okay, I'm Charlie. I'm the one that started the swath grazing, but you got to understand, I got started ranching in the early 80s when everybody was kind of going broke. And so the low input type systems wasn't by choice at first, but after a while it just kind of become habit. But we figure with the swath grazing, we burn a lot less diesel fuel, we save a lot of labor, and the cows do plumb good on it, and then we're recycling nutrients back into our soil also.
So with the swath grazing, is there any sort of, you know, crops or plants that you like to focus on when you plant for swath grazing, or is it kind of change year to year, or have you found one that makes you really happy and that you stuck with?
Well, recent we plant cane, which is a forage sorghum, depending on what part of the country you're from, what you're going to call it. But we found a male sterile hybrid this year, and it appears like the cattle eat it better. But one of the tricks is to plant it a little bit thick and a little bit on the late side so it don't get as big and rank if you're going to swath graze it.
So when the cows go out, I mean, you've been doing this for several years, but have you found that, you know, when you were first doing this, that the cows maybe struggled to take to a swath grazing plan, or do you think that they kind of jumped right in and figured it out right away? Or do you see anything on the cow side of the equation to adding this in that maybe some people might see?
The cows actually took to it pretty easy, but what we found is after about a month, they get bored with eating a monoculture. And so it would be better if we had done more of like your, you know, your mixes for your, struggling with the word for your
Cover crop.
If we use a, we'd like to figure out a mix more like a cover crop and maybe get more variety for our cows and be better for the soil yet. But we're getting awful good tonnage off of pure cane, so that's kind of hard to give it up to. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people think that when we do this primarily in the month of February, that snow might be an issue. And really, it's just a personal issue because it's cold when you're putting up and taking down fence. But the cows have no issue with it, and they'll dig through several inches or
several
more
feet.
Mm-hmm. Of snow. They know that it's there, and they will get it.
And I think that's the big thing is, you kind of mentioned it in your introduction, but having the cows work for us rather than the other way around. They were put here to be able to go out and graze and do the work. So kind of giving them those tools to be able to do that, I think, is a really important thing moving forward with any management decision, is kind of realizing that they too can go out and work for the feed, not us just kind of bring it to them. On our tour this morning, you were talking about in the fields that you chop some of that cane down for silage and put that up for silage to kind of feed when we need to, give them some supplemental energy and nutrients and those type of things. And then the other side you cut into windrows. Kind of how did that maybe come in, you know, with chopping half and half rather than, you know, maybe chopping an entire field? Was it a soil health concern? Was it just kind of you were wanting to give them some room to get out of the cane to lay down? What kind of brought that up?
Well, like most things, it's partially an accident where we actually had a big enough pile, and then as the day goes on, you think about more options, and then it brought a lot of opportunities this year.
Yeah, it was a soil health thing, but also, you know, when you're paying the silage cutter $500 an hour, if you could not pay him, it's a good day.
But it has left a lot of clean ground for the cattle to lay on, and when we have managed it with like our yearlings so that they get one windrow, is it even a quarter mile?
Yeah, pretty close.
Pretty close to a quarter mile windrow every 3 days, and to see them walk away from the feed bunk to come eat that is neat, and then they're obviously distributing their manure a lot better through that field, and then hopefully next year we can chop the opposite half and swath, just do the opposite so that it's spread out even more.
It's really cool. When we drove out there this morning to go out and actually see the evenness of the manure spread throughout the field and where those cattle are actually grazing the cane, how much organic matter has contact with the ground, which in a normal, you know, cattle management thing, we're not necessarily thinking about what's in contact with the ground. I know I wasn't necessarily till I kind of got more exposed to things like this, but ultimately everything we're going to feed our cows comes from the ground. So what can we do to kind of pay that ground back for all the work that it's put in for us? And that aspect, I think, is a really cool thing, especially with how they've incorporated it and it's working. The cows, we went and looked at them, the cows look really good. In terms of condition, and I mean, you had some calves that were kind of dropping out there too, bringing them some feed, but even the little guys running around were pretty happy to be out there. So anything else about the swath grazing that you'd want to kind of highlight, or maybe some challenges that came with implementing it or anything like that?
Well, what we noticed in previous years, that cattle don't even like to lay on the bare ground where we cut the silage. They'll lay on the head rows around the edge of the field where there's still grass. And this year we had such a good crop, and we only made them eat 2/3 of it, and there was enough there that they laid out in the middle of the field. You know, and any time they lay there for a while, they're going to get up and poop. And like the cane is a deep-rooted crop, so in theory they're bringing nutrients from way down, and the cattle are putting it back on the surface. And then the economics is kind of probably the most fun part of the whole system. We couldn't go through the numbers, but we think we're probably wintering cows for half of what it would cost normally.
Which, I mean, in the business where we're, and when cattle prices are good like they are now, and they will be for seemingly at least a little bit more in the future, if we can take the most expensive part of owning a cow with the feed cost down, why wouldn't you, over something that kind of lets them go out and do their cow things? And one of the things that you had mentioned when we were running around is that you have some more moderate framed cows. Do you think that that has some play into your success with at least this sort of management of the swath grazing, is having a more moderate sized female out there?
Well, the moderate framed and the deep bodied, the more capacity your cow has, the lower quality roughage she can get fat on. And so we select for deep body and moderate frame. And when even on our herd sires, we kind of select for a lower end of the milk EPD too. I mean, we try to stay around 20 on the Angus milk EPD.
Kind of keep those low input females around that hopefully can kind of roll with the punches with whatever kind of happens in the future. I'm going to kind of jump ahead a little bit here since we're talking about just kind of your management strategies. One thing that you guys have implemented is the fence line weaning. So, you know, weaning across, whether that's a barbed wire fence line or electric fence line, whatever that looks like, rather than a hard wean. And you guys have seen, you've grown to appreciate it and seen the value of it just over several years of doing that. But walk us through that process and maybe how that idea started, maybe your first go at it and maybe what you saw coming out of there.
So we was just as skeptical as everybody else. So the first go at it, we took like 20 bull calves and put them out back where the neighbors couldn't see it because we knew it wasn't going to work and we didn't want to be laughed at. And anyways, we weaned these 20 bull calves and they never got sick and everything was good. And before that, first fall was over, we'd weaned 500 head. And in the past, we might doctor 10% of the calves post-weaning and we like doctored one out of 500 that fall. And so, it's just the best thing since sliced bread. It bothers the cows worse than it bothers the calves.
And this was like, I believe, 2003. So it has been many years and we've changed our methods a little bit to make it easier on us mostly, where we used to wean them out in the actual pasture. They got sorted, you know, cows went this way and calves went the other way with the fence in between them. And now we sort the cows off the calves, vaccinate them for weaning, and then trail them a quarter mile out to the pasture and then come back and get the cows and trail them to their pasture. And it just works very, very smooth.
That's one of the things that I love about fence line weaning is you kind of mentioned it, Charlie, of it bothers the cows more than the calves. Really using this, it allows the calves to go out into whatever pen you put them into and allow themselves to kind of go out and be a little independent, but still know that they can come back to that fence line and mom's standing there. But a lot of times the cows don't leave that fence line for a little bit till the calves come back from their romping around. But there's a lot of benefits everywhere that you could find of health benefits, performance benefits, all of those things. So I was excited that you guys have seen those kind of play out here. Were there any, you know, challenges up front when that first year kind of went through or anything that kind of came up afterwards where you were like, man, this is why wasn't I doing this sooner? You know, maybe those pros or cons of that first time that you went around?
Well, I mean, but I look back before we started doing it, and inevitably they tore a fence out, tore a corral down when we weaned in the corral. We used to like roll out grass hay across the whole corral to almost cover it. And then we had a mess all winter because then it would freeze in, wouldn't get it cleaned up till spring. And it's just unreal how nice our corrals are since we weaned out in the pasture. And like I said, that year the Atlas storm went through, we was on the edge of it and got rain, but we got 2 inches of rain the night we weaned. And it didn't hurt a thing. If they'd have been in the corral, it'd have been a muddy mess. But corrals are never just right. They're either too dry or they're too wet. There's no such thing as a corral that's just right. And out in that pasture, it's always just right. But, and like the trick is to have them wherever you're gonna wean them, they need to be there the day before. They need to be used to the same. So the only thing that's different when you cross fence wean is their mother's not beside them. They're eating the same thing. They're drinking the same water. And so there's very little shock to their system versus putting them in a corral in a strange place. And then we even found that they stayed gentler all winter. When we weaned them in the corral and they broke out once, they was goofy half the winter. And when you use the low stress weaning, I week after weaning, I can trail a couple hundred calves into the corral by myself.
Yeah, so like you said, we put the pairs out in the pasture where the calves are going to go at least the night before so that they're there with their mother, familiarizing themselves with the area. And that helps a lot. And then you might think that we have some, you know, fancy fence for this, but really it's two barbed wires and two high tensile hot wires, the top and a middle. And it's really not that special. And we started this so long ago that some of the posts, when we put in this fence, are even rotting off already. And we still don't have problems with them crawling the fence at all.
Do you feel that kind of implementing this strategy, you know, you mentioned how they are calmer. We had talked about earlier, you guys have a sale, you know, a bull sale every year. Do you find that it kind of impacts their behavior, you know, those bulls that you maybe bring back, or even heifers that come back? Do you find that, you know, long term, that same kind of calm nature follows them through from this?
Yeah, but we still sort a lot of cattle for dispositions.
I think inevitably there's always the few or the several that are the problem children in the group, but
it's always that one apple.
With this fence line weaning stuff too, I think it's important to remember that it doesn't always have to be something fancy. Courtney, you brought this up of, you know, it's not that you put in a, you know, iron fence that's cemented in the ground or anything. It's a regular fence that you guys use year after year out in the pasture system anyway. So I think that's another thing, is that the change to implement this doesn't have to be, you know, a huge overhaul of your facilities. And I like what you brought up earlier, Charlie, of that first year that you did it, you only did 20 or so head, I think you said. So, you know, it doesn't have to be going whole hog and doing everybody at the same time and, you know, really baptizing yourself by fire for that. So that was a good little tip for everybody with that too. But any else?
Yes, yeah, so we're continuing to change even where now we cap half of the herd in March and the other herd in May, or the rest of the herd. Made them into two herds. And the May herd doesn't actually get weaned until around the first of the year, where our March calving herd gets weaned in mid-October. So that was a learning experience, but ultimately we started feeding silage and hay mix to the pairs before weaning about 2 weeks every other day, just to get the calves used to feed, and then moved them home, got them used to the pasture for a day, weaned them, then they got put with the other weaned calves who, you know, showed them where the bunks and the water were, and the calves or the cows were on the other side of the fence for a couple days, and it just has really worked smoothly.
So basically we across the fence weaned them on prepared forage rather than on native grass, but we got them used to the prepared forage before we weaned them.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's kind of been a recurring topic, at least in this, is that a lot of changes come to an operation out of a need. So you see something and a change happens, or something happens and you realize, well, this isn't necessarily going to work for me any longer. And you've taken that with stride over the last years of, you know, keeping the cow herd moving forward in a positive light and changing to whatever, you know, life throws our way, rolling with the punches. But what are some things for other producers to think about when it comes to implementing any sort of alternative management strategy? Is there anything that kind of comes to mind of, you know, questions you wish you would have asked sooner, or questions that you asked yourself when you guys were thinking about these things?
So, like, we got our calves. Even after we wean them, we never lock them up in small lots anymore. We move feed bunks around on the half the field where we cut silage. We got portable steel bunks. We move them once a week so the manure never builds up. And between the cross the fence weaning and moving our feed bunks and just having a clean spot, and then moving electric fence, they got a clean spot to lay down on the windrows with after you get done eating. We've give up treating them with Coxy crumbles and aromycin sometime in the last 10 years. And we used to have a lot of problem with coccidiosis. But just by changing our management, we got away from spending about $1,500 a year on just medication. And we still have less six calves than we did when we weaned them in the corral and didn't do no swath grazing with them.
Anything to add, Courtney, about like thoughts that maybe you've had around the dinner table that we're sitting at right now of things that maybe you've seen coming in that maybe that you've contributed and added into the business?
Well, some of the stuff when my husband and I moved back here in 2019, some of the changes necessary were simply due to growing the herd to a larger herd. But being married to somebody who's also from a farm and ranch background, it gives a lot of perspective because I have perspective of how his family ranch has operated, and then you know, through helping neighbors and stuff, you see how they do things and you can take a little bit from everything. One thing that I would never want to do again is calve in a lot. We also calve on pasture, and that has been extremely beneficial. And just a few years ago, somebody was telling me about dipping navels in iodine, and I asked them why. They were blown away that we calve out this many head, and I didn't know why. But we've never had to, so we don't have problems with it, calving on pasture. And it's just interesting to keep learning and see what else is out there.
Yeah, I was going to say, today I've learned a lot about different management. I mean, I'm from Northwest Iowa. We've got corn, soybeans, you know, pasture sprinkled in between on the land you can't farm. So it's a whole different life style and a whole different management style. Even, you know, realistically in the grand scheme of things, that's not that far away. And kind of getting out and seeing what other people are doing really helps you learn a lot. And one of the things when we were out that I thought was super interesting that you guys have done is actually chop down some of these cedar trees that you've kind of had growing in fences under power lines everywhere that they're not supposed to be, and offering up them up to the cows to kind of scratch on and kind of do what they need to do. Is there anything, you know, what brought that up? Like, was it just kind of a drag it in there and they so happened to itch on it, or kind of what was going on there?
Well, we kind of knew from when we move them that they like to rub on cedar trees anyways. If they hadn't been around them, they was attracted to them. So we knew they liked to rub on them, and then, we was hoping to get more of a, like a repel lice. In theory, back the old timers built cedar chests out of cedar because it kept moths out of their clothes. So we was hoping to get a little repellent from bugs. We can't really make that claim, but they still have lice, but
sure saves on fences and everything else that they want to scratch on. If they are itchy or bored, then they have something to scratch on. And we have a abundance of cedar trees here in the Rough River Hills. So cutting them down, dragging them home is, you know, a 10-minute project, not a...
These trees, they was in the road ditch, they was in the fences, they all needed cut down anyway, so why not put them to some use?
And then once they're all got the good rubbing out of them, then we drag them to a draw where we're fighting erosion and help them, help the draw stop eroding with that in there.
And everything is a learning process. First time we tried that, we built a dam, and then it just washed down the creek. When you're putting them in a spot to keep it from eroding, you want to build a filter. You just want to slow the water down and spread it out. We had to throw a few rocks on top of the trees to get them to stay where we wanted, but we got old foundations and enough rocks around here, and we're kind of getting. We had to cut the trees anyways. We're getting good out of them for saving our fences, and now we're saving erosion. So we're getting three uses out of the trees.
I was going to say, if anything, it's a good use for a cedar tree that no one wants anyway. So at least give the tree some sort of purpose rather than sprouting up everywhere where they're not supposed to be. And it was cool to see when we were finishing, coming back, to see the cows actually kind of all over congregated around these trees, actively scratching or just using them as, you know, kind of a common area spot to rest and friends and do all of the... something of these trees that really doesn't have giving it some sort of purpose. like you mentioned, save not having to fix stretched out posts that they scratch, anything like that. One other thing that I come to was the fact that you fed beef. And kind of a, you know, grass-fed beef, and it seems like we had some for lunch. So that's up to you guys. But to your operation, where did a separate enterprise comes from the herd, or where does that?
It started out as a hobby. Being in this, you know, if our cattle could be, or, you know, if we had the right flesh. And so it experiment just to prove to eat them, got to liking it. But marble, just as good. And I think I've had bad experiences. So they haven't ate ours.
And it just kind of, we do it because check our replacement, keep some back, and then the next summer, grass is at its peak before us on the nicest grass, and that, you know, they're about 20. And then we do sell, but we don't ask much of a premium. I don't think it'll ever be us, never say never.
Put some meat in the freezer, everything that went into it, and about eating your home. Started doing it several years before, and there's just something about being where that animal steps that went into it, and I'm guys knowing the blood they come from, genetic that. But other than that, like, what they've been into that of kind of just pull the report that the cutter aren't bred or anything. But is there any, like, you know, other learning found with, even if it was kind of just for.
But even where they're a critter to eat, you know, when everybody has old stuff, and it was nice at night, trying to be cheap, and you lost a calf, and then there, it was a learning curve. When we take these, we breed like 200 opens. And we keep this body easy. We know I have the best team and doing well in our group.
Hello to our listeners. Arna chiming back in. We are with the Totten Angus crew. I just want to encourage you all to remember. Next episode, we will continue with Courtney as we dive further in tuned. But with that, headquarters for all things at extension.sdc, the latest beef information. We're hoofing it out of here.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Cattle HQ, brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef. We invite you to visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information, as well as subscribe to the show on Spotify. You will also find show notes and resources from today's episode. Until next time, remember, success is not a goal, it's a byproduct.